Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So we have some new faces for me, at least. Maybe we should do introductions. Just
yes, these are people from Wednesday night who came last week. Wendy, Karen,
Craig,
Nico,
Edith,
Paul,
Marie,
Ellie,
Carolyn. So we're finishing with the words that we just chanted through the with the help of the words of Suzuki Roshi. We've been following along flowing streams in the darkness. Sort of flowing. And we have come to the last chapter, which actually doesn't have a verse before it because it's a talk given to a visiting class. And the title is We Are Just a Tiny Speck of Big Being. So it's one of the more abstract ones in a way, because Suzuki Roshi is speaking not only to the students that he's been studying, reflecting, sitting with this text together with them, but he's also talking to visiting philosophy students. So he has a bit more of a philosophical take on it. At least that's the way I read it. He kind of draws, but in a way it's very appropriate, his language here, because he sort of draws back and gives you this sense, we are just a tiny speck of big being. And it's like the language sort of elevates and looks like you're looking through a telescope up at the night sky or something, the way he talks about this. He begins like, the purpose of the study of Buddhism is to have a perfect understanding of things, to understand ourselves and what we are doing in our daily life. So it's a little different when he's talking more in the Zen language of, like in the last chapter, do not pass your nights and days in vain. It says, listen to the tongueless teaching, we say. Don't listen to my words. Now he's saying, yes, we study Buddhism to come to this perfect understanding of the way things are in life. But he goes on to flesh this out a bit and talk about how the intellectual understanding works together with the understanding of actually practicing and experiencing our own understanding. So in a way he recapitulates the whole message of the Sendokai, which we have which we just chanted and have been reflecting with these 13 weeks now. This is the 13th. The message that everything works together from the relative and the absolute. So no matter what level we look at it on, whether it's the big picture telescope in the sky, it really reminded me of looking at the night sky, this chapter. I think it was just that phrase, the tiny speck in big being. Even when you don't get to an observatory, just looking up at the night sky is pretty amazing if you can get to a place, particularly if you get to a place where there aren't a lot of lights, electric lights, to obscure the sky. There are so many lights up there in the darkness, and you do feel like, wow, you're just this little being down here. But Suzuki is helping us to remember that actually we're a tiny speck, but we are part of the big being. We're a part of that too. We're a big part of it. It goes from way up there all the way down through us. We're made of the same material, and we each have our form. So when you think about the sun's form is kind of an unimaginable form. I was talking with friends recently, and they're all excited because they're going next year. It's the big total solar eclipse, so they've plotted out where they're gonna look at it somewhere in, I think it was it southeastern, no, was it Nebraska? I think Nebraska is where they're gonna look at it. But it's cutting an arc through southeastern Oregon and then kind of going down a kind of a southeasterly trajectory. So that's kind of unimaginable, the sun, how big that is, but that's the same kind of energy that we're made of. We do it in our form, which is eating food and then converting that to the same kind of energy, in the sense that the sun's using, that the sun is made of. It's all these processes are unfolding in us, just like they are out there in the stellar space. It was watching a film, actually part of a film from W.S. Merwin, the American poet, who has this new film out called Even Though the Whole World is Burning. He's a practitioner connected with the Aiken Roshi in Hawaii group, where he was for many years. And he's a very esteemed American poet, one of the greatest, one would say, of the 20th century. Some people make that claim. And he was talking about the wildness. And he says the wildness isn't anything wild and crazy, but it's the sense of what we can't grasp. It's the sense of we know something's there, and we see this in nature, but we can't quite get a hold of it. And that's what I think the Sendokai is pointing to also. We know that there's something. That's why we come and sit. And in the sitting, in Zen, in this Zen, the sitting allows us to see the darkness. Throughout this book, Suzuki Roshi's used a lot of the metaphors of darkness and light, and in this one too, I think in here is where he mentions the basement, and it's dark in the room where he was giving this teisho, this talk, but it's darker down in the basement, and how that is relative to where we stand. And when we sit, or to where we are at any moment, and when we sit, somehow that mystery unfolds for us, and we get to know ourselves, to understand ourselves, in ways that do help us live. Maybe not the perfect understanding of things, but we get to understand how we are in relation to other things and other beings, and how other things are to us. He speaks in here of criticism, and how through practice we see that when we set ourselves aside and criticize someone else, we're actually criticizing ourselves. And we see that in a very clear way through sitting. Just arises, and we know that that's what's going on. And that helps us be with everything, and helps us be with ourself. Let me find that place where he says that. When you think he is not good, you are actually criticizing someone within yourself. It's a picture of yourself. this is the understanding of the big mind that includes everything. Things happen only within yourself. They are the activities of life. So even when you say, not only criticizing someone else, but any time we set ourselves apart, which we have a predisposition to do because we kind of forget that the relative and the absolute are fitting like the box and its lid, but we are part of this. But we tend to put ourselves outside of ourselves as if we're standing outside of what is. And we tend to forget that we are part of what we see when we really see when we really see the chair, we see that that has its form and its function, and that fits us when we sit down or the cushion. There's another one of a really sweet, I thought, little story he told is about himself and his wife. The problem we have in the world of brightness. So I often complain about my relationship with my wife, but I don't think I can live without her. And it's the problem we have. When the lamp is bright, I can see myself and my wife. When there's no lamp, there's no problem. But we don't think about the darkness. We don't think about that really it's all big together. We just take ourselves out and say, I'm here and she's doing that. We often have this problem with relationships, especially close relationships, but often even not so close. It's political relationships. It's them out there and they're not part of what I am. But I think we can see, if we choose to see in the darkness, to be in the darkness, that we're not so different even from those that we don't agree with. We always suffer from the life that we can see with our eyes and hear with our ears. In the world of brightness, it is difficult to live without others. To live with them is also difficult. That's the problem we have. What shall we do? But even if you have the slightest understanding of darkness, which is just the other side of brightness, then you will find out how to live in the brightness of the world. So this is what's practice. Getting the slightest understanding of the darkness. So how do we live in the light where we set ourselves apart? Is we make ourselves the center, and then there's that distance. We're not just we're not just in relationship anymore. We're the center and outside, and this is common, and we all do it, and that's what practice is. It's finding our way through that, into that even. It's kind of what I'm making and my making. This is, I'm the one who's the center of the picture, and I have my judgments and my my preferences. And that's, we do, and we also need to have judgments and preferences in some situations. The thing is that it becomes a habit. So that's what practice reminds us of. It doesn't have to be a habit. It doesn't have to be a habit that we're always the center. We're always making ourselves the center. I think it's, for me, it's helpful to remember that when he says, Suzuki Roshi says, everything is so vast, we are just a tiny speck of the big being. And everything includes our own mind, body. I mean, there's a lot happening in there all the time. He alludes to that a bit with how all of these systems just go on working without our having to think about them or do much about them, except when something goes wrong, and then we do have to think about it, and that's when we need to pay that kind of attention. We can't ignore things, but seeing from both sides, we see a whole, and we see more clearly. There's another section here. So the practice is always right here. It's not near or far, as the Sandokai says. It's just when we set ourselves in the center of the spotlight, it seems far away. When we get wrapped up in our whatever it is, whatever disturbs, as another teacher of mine once said, whatever disturbs our ease of being, our peace of mind in the world. That's a difference when things disturb us, and we sense that, we know that, with maybe not finding the words for it, but we do know that through practice. And when things elicit other ways of being a human being. A lot of things that are out in the world are really awesome in the sense of causing us to just, wow, look at that. I mean, even if we look at just looking up at the sky, I'm sure it's happened to all of you, and practice brings this into the highlights of just walking into this building and seeing the little cairn that somebody puts up, or this plant that's in bloom, or that plant that's in bloom. When we're not walking around all in the center of I-making and my-making, but are attuned to the world around us and outside of us, including the other humans. I was reading I don't even know what I would call it, actually, reading. I was looking into and looking through a book by a photographer friend of mine who has really a lot of long practice and is a professional photographer. And he has, every now and then, he has a few words that he puts in these, within this collection of book of photographs. But it's just, his eye is so attuned to what's, one of his books is called Just Looking. And seeing the shadows and the juxtapositions of things that are in our everyday world are really quite, it's really quite remarkable. So sometimes we do have a confusion of what needs to be done, but as we practice, we find ourselves less confused, or if we're confused, then we're just get into the confusion, just be there with that confusion and recognize that for what it is. Some things are so big that happen in our life, sometimes we are confused. We have loved ones who get ill, or we have things happen to our friends or our family or in the world that are really hard to understand, and they confuse us. And just being with that can also be part of our practice. Not setting ourselves apart from the confusion. Well, as Suzuki Roshi keeps saying through this whole book, and as Angie says a lot too, and many teachers in Buddhism say it's difficult to put in words. So I'll let Suzuki Roshi say this. Give him a word after all of my words so far tonight. He says, and he's talking here to the philosophy students as well as his Zen practitioner students. And the students ask a question like, well, what is this talk? Like, what have I just been doing? What is a teisho? You know, am I supposed to get something from that? You know, is that the brightness or is that the darkness? You know, so student poses this question. And Suzuki Roshi says, well, a teisho is saying, here is something you must have as a Buddhist. Look. So it's not about reading or memorizing the books, but the teisho has to come from inside, from the heart. But I must use words. I follow logic and use special philosophical terms. But sometimes, ignoring those terms, we can speak directly about reality. Sometimes it may not be with words. And then he knocks on the table. This is teisho. To talk about something that it is not possible to talk about is teisho. Excuse me, I cannot explain it so well. So that's why another form of Zen is in Rinzai, they do koan practice a lot. And there are koans that are so very much associated with Soto Zen practice too. Although in this particular lineage, we haven't done much of those. But koans are, they're kind of stories. They're kind of those stories that put you at the edge of, I was just at another Buddhist conference and recently in the last week or two, and we were talking about it in philosophical terms, the inactive cognition, which is a form that takes language to the edge of linguistic nonsense, which is sort of what koans do. They take, so what the teacher says, another famous one, the knocking one, there are apparently many, many, I don't know that many koans, but many with knocking. The teacher comes in with a big stick and he goes, when the student comes in. And then he said, what is this? Is it a stick? Is it a sound? Don't come back till you know the answer, and you can't say anything. So this is kind of taking words to the edge. And, Suzuki Roshi knocked. So, it's a few words. And I hope you all have some words. Maybe. If not, we could just sit in the darkness. That's fine too.
I just loved learning about this book, and my jaw dropped. Wow, it's an amazing field guide, and it seems to have put together some words that are describing indescribable. And the other thing I've been thinking is that I don't really believe, and just because I haven't experienced it at all, so I don't know what everybody's experienced, but I just don't really believe in this instant enlightenment. When you said it, you know, you get a little bit of understanding of the darkness, and that changes how you are in the light. And to me, it's like, yeah, just the little bits. It's all we can hope for. And so then it's really hard for me to hear these stories where someone's like, I was just drinking my coffee and I looked over there and all of a sudden, boom, I had a huge shift. And anyway.
Well,
and you hear all these in, you know, the
Zen.
Yes, and then he was.
And then he was. But usually in the Zen stories, they come at the, there's a relationship, and they come at the end of practice. So it is wise to look at the source of who these stories are. And we do live in a culture that's full of, yes, it can just happen like this. On the other hand, in Zen as well, it's both and. There are the instant, there's Kensho, the sudden, and then there's Satori, and different people use different terms, but it's not, enlightenment is not a steady state. It's not something you get, and then, you know, that's it. So you do have to look at the sources of those stories. In Buddhism, and not only Zen, but it goes along with practice. I think when we did Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind a while ago, you know, there's that story. Then the student asks at the end of the talk, then why do we practice? You know, and it's like, if we all have Buddha nature, then why are we practicing? You know, that kind of story. Because you don't know you have Buddha nature, and that's why you stumble through your life. There's a wonderful phrase in Shin Buddhism, Amitabha Buddha Buddhism, foolish beings. We're all just foolish beings. I love that phrase. It's one I tell myself on occasion. that's just what we are. But and as Merwin said, we're the most self-centered species on the planet. So let's not forget that. I saw one of those little cartoons that happen across your way when people send you things that come from the internet. And it was like a headline from one of the Daily Onion or those kind of papers. And it says, it has this picture of a gorilla, like a photograph of a gorilla kind of sitting and looking really glum and dejected. And the headline underneath was, gorillas accept the fact that humans are just the most self-centered species. I mean, but there's the other side to that, but. Which is definitely worth considering, too. Well, I did want to make a couple of announcements. So, and one is that I was talked with Angie, and we thought it would be good to do Burton Watson's Vimalakirti Sutra, which you took a picture of.
I brought the picture.
Okay.
I brought my computer.
You brought your computer? Okay. Well, it's Burton Watson anyway, and Vimalakirti, and it's easily accessible, and it's one of the most, it's the most recent one that's easily accessible. There's also a Thomas Cleary, which both Angie and I are fans of Thomas Cleary, so he's a very good translator, excellent. And but that is available only as a Kindle. So that would be download, you know, you'd have to download that only. You can read it on other devices, but devices aren't necessarily the best way we found to read them, but it would be, and if you want to know that's $5 to do that. And Burton Watson, we looked up, is available pretty much used, or probably undoubtedly public libraries, because he's such a great translator, for inexpensively, you know. So that would be the Vimalakirti Sutra, which is a marvelous sutra and a very different kind of flavor than Suzuki Roshi. But Vimalakirti was a lay person, he was a layman, so that really speaks to what our practice is. He wasn't one of the, because many of these Zen stories are about the monks, the great ancestors and the teaching koans, they're about the monks. And this is about Vimalakirti. Lay practitioner. So the one other announcement I wanted to make is that Angie's birthday, her 80th birthday party, will be at Henry Cowell Park in Felton on June 11th. And Chris Brassini, who is spearheading the effort to get the party all together, would love to know if anyone wants to help. And she has given me her phone number, so you can call her to help set up the tables and to just get the space ready on that day. So if you'd like to get involved in that, you can come up and I'll give you her phone number. I'm sure we'll make an announcement next week as well. So were there other?
I was going to announce that tomorrow the insight meditation is having Misha Merrill as their teacher, who is a student in the Suzuki lineage. So it'd be interesting to hear if you can make it. 7:30, right?
Yes.
So good. Okay.
That's here.
Yes.
Here.
Excellent. Misha, yeah. The friends. Thank you, friends.
Yes.
Also, I have just a tag along mm-hmm. about the picnic. Chris has asked me to help coordinate transportation. There's only one person from out of town who needs transit now, and that's Jane Jasper from New Mexico, but she'll be staying in San Jose. So I may be asking again next week if anybody in San Jose, I'll try to find out where she's staying, could give her a ride to the picnic. But also, if somebody needs a ride to the picnic and wants me to put the word out, just let me know, because that's my small task for this picnic on the 11th, to help people get rides if they need it.
And if you, if you don't, if you haven't received word about it, it's at, is it 11:30? I've forgotten the.
I think it's 11.
11. Okay, so it would be a little earlier than that, and it's going to be. I don't know what all Chris has planned, but it sounds like it's going to be a gala. There will be food and stories and anything people want to bring, music, ukuleles. If you do ukuleles.
Jeffrey said
it's June the 11th, Saturday, June the 11th, and it's in at Henry Cowell.
11-11.
So then maybe we'll have our ending 1 minute.
Yes.